Chapter 22. Beelzebub in Tibet for the first time. As the route proposed for the journey through Tibet was very rarely used by the three-brained beings of those days, and we could not count upon joining one of their caravans, I had to organize one of my own, and I began at once to make preparations and to lay in all the supplies we would need along the way. I procured some scores of the quadruped beings called horses, mules, donkeys, Chamianian goats, and so forth, and hired a number of your biped favorites to look after them and to carry out the semi-conscious work required for this mode of travel. As soon as I'd got together everything necessary, I set off, accompanied by Ahun. This time, we passed through still stranger regions, where the nature of that ill-fated planet was even more extraordinary, and we encountered, or rather there came within the field of our vision, a much greater number of the various one-brained and two-brained beings, which are called wild, and which at that time came there from remote parts of the continent of Ashak in order to hunt for prey, that is, to procure their first being food. These wild beings were then particularly dangerous not only for the three-brained beings, but also for the quadruped beings that your favorites, with the cunning proper to them, had already made their slaves, compelling them to work solely for the satisfaction of their egoistic needs. And these wild beings were particularly dangerous because just at that period there was being crystallized in their presence, again due to the abnormal conditions of being existence established by the three-brained beings there, a special function about which I shall tell you at the proper time. It was chiefly on account of these wild beings that the regions through which our route lay were almost inaccessible to the three-brained beings of that period. It was possible for them to pass through these places only, as they say, by day. That is, when in the atmosphere of their planet, the process of Ioioa was taking place in the active element Okidanok. They could travel by day because during this time of the Krentonalnian position of their planet in relation to their sun, almost all the wild beings were in the being state called sleep, that is, in the state in which the energy necessary for their ordinary existence is automatically elaborated in their presence. And this takes place in them during just this time, whereas in three-centered beings, on the contrary, energy is elaborated only when that same sacred process is not occurring in the atmosphere, that is to say, during what they call night. And so, my boy, your favorites could pass through these places only by day. At night, great vigilance was required, and they had to erect artificial shelters to protect themselves and their belongings from the wild beings. For during that period of the Krentonalnian position of the planet Earth, these wild beasts are wide awake and take their first being food. Since by then they had become accustomed to using for this purpose chiefly the planetary bodies of weaker beings of other forms arising on their planet, they would prowl about at night and seize such beings in order to make use of their planetary bodies to satisfy this need. These wild beings, particularly the smallest ones, were already perfected to the highest degree in wiliness and cunning. Of course, also owing to the abnormally established conditions of ordinary being existence of the three-brained beings there. So all along our route, we, and especially those we had hired for the semi-conscious work, had to be extremely watchful and alert at night in order to protect ourselves, our quadruped workers, and our supplies. A pack of wild beings would gather around our camp at night, having come there to pounce on something suitable for their first being food. They were rather like a mob of your favorites, on the floor of the stock exchange, or at an election of representatives to some society or other, whose nominal aim is the common pursuit of a means to a happy existence for all their fellow beings, regardless of their notorious castes. We kept huge fires burning all night to scare away the wild beings, and our biped workers, although forbidden to do so, destroyed the ones that came too near our camp with poisoned Tilnapara arrows. Yet not a single night passed without some of what are called lions, tigers, and hyenas carrying off one or more of our quadruped beings, so that their numbers shrank daily. It's true, my boy, that this way back to the Sea of Beneficence took us much longer than the way we had come, but what we saw and heard during our journey of the strangeness of the psyche of your favorites fully justified the extra time spent. We traveled under these conditions for more than a month of their time, and finally came upon a small settlement of three-brained beings who, as we learned, had only recently migrated there from Pearllandia. The name of this settlement was Sincretorta. Later on, when the surrounding region was populated, this place became its chief center. The whole country also came to be known by that name, though afterwards the name was changed several times, and it is now called Tibet. As we came upon these beings, just when night was falling, we asked them for shelter. When they gave us permission to stay in their settlement, we were very glad at the prospect of a night's rest, for we were all so exhausted by the constant warfare with the wild beings that it was imperative for us, especially for our biped workers, to spend at least one night in peace. In the course of the conversation that evening, it transpired that all the beings of this settlement belonged to a sect well known in Pearllandia under the name of Self-Tamers, formed by followers of that very religion, which, as I've already told you, purported to be based on the direct instructions of Saint Buddha. In this connection, I might mention that the beings of your planet have yet another particularity that long ago became proper to them alone, which consists in this, that no sooner does some new Havat Vrinoni, or religion, arise among them than its followers begin to split up into different camps, and each of these soon forms what is called a sect of its own. The strangest thing about this particularity of theirs is that those who belong to such a sect never call themselves sectarians, as the name is considered offensive. They are called this only by those who do not belong to their sect. And the adherents of a sect are sectarians, for others, only as long as they have no guns and ships at their disposal. But as soon as they get hold of enough guns and ships, what had been a particular sectarian doctrine at once becomes the dominant religion. The beings, both of this settlement and of many other districts in Pearllandia, had become sectarians after having broken away from the religion whose doctrine I had studied in detail and which later was known as Buddhism. This sect of the self-tamers arose owing to that distorted understanding of one of the principles of the Buddhist religion, which, as I've already told you, they called suffering in solitude. And it was in order to give themselves up to this famous suffering without hindrance from others like themselves that these beings with whom we spent the night had settled so far away from their own people. Now, my boy, everything I learned that night and saw the next day of the devotees of that sect made such a painful impression upon me that for many of their centuries I could never recall it without shuddering. And so I should like to tell you in some detail about what I then saw and learned. During our conversation that evening, I learned that while still in Perlandia, before their migration to this isolated place, the leaders of this sect had invented a special form of suffering. They had decided to withdraw to some inaccessible place where other beings, not belonging to their sect and not initiated into its arcana, would be unable to prevent them from inflicting upon themselves this particular form of suffering they had invented. After a long search, they finally found this place that we had come upon by chance and saw it was well suited to their purpose. As they were already solidly organized and materially secure, in the face of great difficulties, they migrated with their families to this place, which was almost inaccessible to their ordinary countrymen, and, as I've already said, they named Asincratortia. At first, while they were settling down in this place, they existed more or less in harmony. But when they began actually putting into practice the special form of suffering they had invented, their families, and particularly their wives, having discovered that forms of suffering really was, rebelled and made a great outcry, which resulted in a schism. This schism had occurred not long before our arrival, and already small groups were beginning to migrate to new places that they considered even more suitable for an isolated existence. For a better understanding of what follows, you will need to know the principal cause of the schism among these sectarians. It turned out that the leaders of the sect, while they were still in Perlandia, had pledged themselves to withdraw completely from beings like themselves and to stop at nothing in order to attain liberation from the consequences of the property of that organ of which the divine teacher Saint Buddha had spoken. Their pledge committed them to exist in a certain way until their planetary bodies were completely destroyed. In other words, until their death. And the purpose of this special form of existence was to purify what they called their souls of all the alien deposits due to that organ Kundabuffer, which, as Saint Buddha had told them, their ancestors had once possessed. And having freed themselves from these consequences, they would acquire the possibility, as the divine teacher had also said, of reblending with the all-embracing holy prana. But when they had settled down and begun to put into practice this special form of suffering, and their wives, on learning its true nature, had rebelled, many of these sectarians, under the influence of their wives, declined to carry out the obligations they had assumed in Perlandia, and as a result, they split up into two independent parties. From then on, these sectarians, formerly called the Self-Tamers, had to be called by different names. Those who remained faithful to the obligations they had taken upon themselves were called Orthodoxy Dorkaki, while those who had renounced certain of the obligations assumed in their native land were called Ketoshki Doraki. At the time of our arrival in Sinkratotsa, the sectarians named Orthodoxy Dorkaki had established, not far from their original settlement, a well-organized monastery where their special form of suffering was in full swing.